Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, tickers and talkers. I just made that up right there.
Wow.
My name is Jared, and with me is the one I want to spend my time with, Anna.
I'm a talker.
Yeah. We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us here at our table. Today, we're looking at Take Time. Designed by Alexi Piovasan and Julian Prothier. Artwork by Maud Kalmel. Again, I'm so sorry. And published by Libeled.
Take Time is a 2-to-4 player puzzle game with limited communication. It's a cooperative deduction game where players work around the clock, trying to put the correct number values in the right places, making sure all the pregame plans were executed as well as possible. With 40 different tests and challenges to complete, is this game worth the time?
Ah.
Find out as we discuss.
All right, Anna. I have a would you rather. Would you rather be able to pause time as much as you need to? You can't move, but you are aware of what's going on. You are the only one that is conscious in that moment, and you can collect your thoughts if you will. Or would you rather have 24 rewind hours per year?
When you say that I can't move, but I can remain conscious, is there a possibility that I could also remain unconscious?
Sure.
Okay. Then I'd do the first one simply just so I could sleep more.
No, that makes it too powerful. You're right.
What?
Yeah, no, because you have to like consciously trigger the action.
And then I could go to sleep.
I suppose in theory, like, I don't know how that would work. Because like, would you falling asleep, making you unconscious, end the triggering of the stopping the time?
Well, then you shouldn't have said that I could stay unconscious.
I know. I regret it.
I'm sorry. Did I mess up your
take it at face value and answer the question? I mean, think about it, right? Like, basically, you're taking the trade-off of, do I want to have endless time to think about any question or circumstance before it actually happens? Or do I want to be able to fix actual mistakes, but I only get 24 hours worth?
I don't want either one of those things. Do I have to pick one?
All right, we're done.
If I don't get to sleep.
Nope, I'm leaving.
If I can't sleep, then I don't see the point of having extra time just to worry about things.
It's not worrying. You're calculating. You're thinking through it. Like, you've never been asked a hard question. You're like, man, I wish I had, like, a minute to think about this before I answer.
I don't know. It sounds like you're describing an anxiety disorder. Anyway.
I am a disorder.
No. And then the other one, I guess it depends on when. Like, would you have to rewind the hour right then? Or could I decide to rewind the hour later? Because a lot of times I think things are mistakes.
I'm done.
We're moving on. That end up working
the
out
answer,
fine.
The answer is dependent upon whether you like to be proactive or reactive. That's all it is. Because you can react to a major mistake and take the 24 hours, or you can be proactive and try and avoid the mistake altogether by thinking it through on the front end. Both are flawed.
What would you rather do?
I'd rather be proactive. I'd rather have the chance to think it through and then just own whatever decision I came to.
But if you had like endless time to think it through, you don't think that you...
Oh yeah, no, there's real risk that I like get stuck in
analysis paralysis trap.
But it means nothing because
to
nothing...
everybody else.
No, it means nothing to me either.
You're under torture because you just thought about something for three hours.
I know, I'm
just
thinking
only
it
through. 3 seconds.
I think it's fine.
I don't know. That's what I'm saying.
Can you imagine if you had 3 hours to think through the answer to every question in Greek class in college? I could have actually like passed that class without stress. It would have been great.
You think if you had more time to look at the Greek, it would have made a sense?
Yeah, because the more I've thought about it, like what you would do is you'd have the book open, okay?
So and, you would cheat.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Okay. You told me I couldn't sleep. I don't think you can cheat.
Why not? I'm setting it up with the power that I've been given. All right. This is taking way too long. I really thought you'd have an answer, but it's fine.
Well, I did. The first one, if I can sleep.
Let's talk about how to play this game.
We're taking too much time. Please tell the people how to play this game, Jared.
Okay. Before everyone times out. All right. So in Take Time, you are working together in a 2-4 player game, trying to place cards in their correct spots so that at the end of it, you have a nice clock with the 6 different sections that increase in order from least to greatest, much like a clock does. So everyone's going to be dealt a certain number of cards depending on how many players you're playing. But no matter how many players you're playing, 12 of the 24 cards are going to be dealt. Now, this deck consists of 2 sets of cards that are numbered 1 to 12. And so you're going to be given these cards. You're not going to look at them yet, though, because before you play, you get to have a little all-hands meeting and talk about where you're going to try and tackle the different strategies of playing out this hand. Now, of course, you don't know what's in your hand, but you do know the basic rules of the game. You know the rules for that particular scenario, and you can talk through basic strategy of if you have X, then you might want to do Y. And so everyone at the table agrees. And then once it's been decided and somebody looks at their hand, well, there's no more talking at that point. So at that point, you will go around the table playing 1 card at a time, and there are 6 different slots around this clock. And you can put your card face down in any one of those 6 slots. Then the next person goes and they can do the same thing. You can have as many cards as you want in any one particular section. However, there's a few basic rules. 1, section 1 must be the lowest value, and section 6 must be the highest value, and every section in between must be at least equal to or higher than the previous section. In addition to that, you can't go over the value of 24. If you go higher, then you bust. If you break any of these rules, you lose collectively. So at the end of the round, once everyone's played all their cards, then you go ahead and reveal all the cards to make sure that everything was done correctly. If it was, then you move on to the next level. If it wasn't, well, then you gotta try again. But there is a way that the game helps you. There is a certain number of cards that can be placed face up based on the number of players. If you fail the round, you get an additional card that can be played face up instead of face down the next time that you try that level. So there's various things that will happen from mission to mission. You will get to decide where you want to place the hand that determines the highest and the lowest sections. There will be various rules that you will learn from mission to mission, depending on what that particular one calls for. It might be that a particular section has to have the first card, or it might be that a certain section must have only a certain number of cards, or whatever it may be. And so, like we said in the intro, there's 40 of these things, lots of different ways to play, lots of fun, and it is something that plays really quick. You can get through a game in 15 or 20 minutes. And then decide if you like each other still or if you need to take some time to figure some things out. So, Anna, this game has a very simplistic art style to it, I feel like. Like, it really leans into the whole clock mechanisms and the... What's the right word?
I already disagree with your word simplistic, actually.
Well, there's a particular word, but go ahead and correct me and it'll come to me later.
So it's got a steampunk feel.
It does.
Say that.
Yeah, that's not really what I'm going for, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay, but it does. It has a steampunk feel. Mm-hmm. You've got the Roman numerals for all the way around the clock and the gears and everything like that. I was impressed by the art because the different scenarios are all different clock faces.
That's true. The clock faces and the background behind the clocks are very elaborate.
Backgrounds behind them or things come in kind of out through the mm-hmm. clock or around the clock. I thought it was beautiful.
Oh, yeah. No, it is beautiful.
And very, very, very varied in the ways that they were able to make each clock look different, have a different feel, a darker feel, a lighter feel, a springtime feel, kind of thing. So I thought they were very creative with the art.
Yeah, that's okay. So when I say simplistic, what I mean by that is there's not a ton of nonsense that really bogs down the game with the art. It's very elegant and it works like a clock in that it is very mechanical in its art style, where you are able to read a clock very clearly, even if there is background art behind it. or whatever it may be. And I very much feel like I'm working around a clock whenever I play this game.
Sure. Yeah. And the, yes, it's easy to read. It's easy to see what you need to do. Even the special rules that go with each scenario, because each scenario is the face of a clock, basically. Yes. And so you put that in the center, and then there's a card that goes along with the scenario that says mm-hmm. any special rules that go with that scenario above the basic rules that Jared told you and how to play. And even the numbers that have special rules look different on the clock face, and then you can kind of match them to the scenario guide that has those special rules. So that also helps you kind of walk through it. The artwork lets you know when a special rule is happening.
Yeah, and there's not a ton of special rules, even though there's a ton of scenarios. There's some symbology that covers the same rule.
Yeah.
And they mix and match those. So it's not like you're looking at an overwhelming number of things. So that's, it's nice too, that you have simple symbology that it's easy to look up with the cheat sheet, but also like you learn them fairly quickly. And so as they kind of mix and match, you're like, oh, okay, we're going to do this. And then we're going to, but no, I really enjoy the art style. Obviously the clock was low hanging fruit based on what the game is, but it was very much the right decision in the way that the whole thing was orchestrated with how you play your cards and how the different, even like you were talking about with the Roman numerals and the symbology, like it all just fits very much into that mechanical vibe. And then you have the nice artwork mixed in as well.
So would you not call it a steampunk art style? Because that's what I would put it in, but you keep saying mechanical instead.
I guess. I don't know that it's full on steampunk to me, but...
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, I don't know. It's got like this weird mix of nature and a clock.
Yes.
That, I don't know what that word
and
is.
That was the fun part of seeing the nature around the clocks in the different scenarios. So
yeah.
Yeah, and you have your moon cards and your sun cards, which have
those are your two different suits.
Art.
That's right.
Those are your two different suits, and the cards are 1 to 12. And again, easy to read, but pretty, I would say, with the cards.
So one thing for me right off the bat that instantly became a draw is that I love the mind. The mind is such a fun, I don't want to say gimmick, but it is this fun exercise where we're putting cards down and trying to stack them in the right order. And I think Take Time takes that chaos and kind of exercise in an activity and turns it into a real game. I love the way that Take Time takes the basic elements of the mind and then turns it into something more. I loved the pregame discussion before you look at your cards. I love the way that there's structure and where these cards need to go, but also giving a little bit of flexibility in that, like, you don't have to go 2, 3, 4 within the one section, but you do have to make sure the sections increase as you go. So that was something for me that I, as soon as we started playing, I was like, oh, this is really good. I'm really excited about this. Did you have something like that when we first started playing?
I'd say that the thing that has stood out to me the most about this game is that there is so much strategy that can be discussed before you even start playing the game. And it's been fun. We started out playing it just as two players because we thought, oh, fun puzzle to figure out together. Yep. We've also played it at three players. We've played it at four players. We've played it with a wide variety of different types of people. Mm-hmm. And it is amazing that for a puzzle game, there's not a single answer to the puzzle.
That's right.
Which I think is a very fun thing. And so you can have a lot of different types of strategies that you decide. And, oh, we'll try this one this time, or we'll try that one this time, or this person that has this one should go first, or the person that has this thing should go first, or should you play only in your only in the section that you've already played in so that you know it's already there, or should you vary it up? I mean, there's a lot to try, and I'd say that we haven't necessarily felt like there is one single answer or one single strategy that necessarily even works best. It's scenario specific, and it's community specific,
very much player specific.
Player specific. So I think that that's a really cool part of the game because I guess I'm used to sitting down in a game and figuring out, all right, this is how this game works.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, you have to refigure it out every time or try different things if it doesn't work and you fail a scenario. How many times have we failed a scenario?
A lot.
I mean, like in one go.
Oh, I don't know.
I think it was no more than. Was it 2 or 3?
We had one where it was 3 times.
Yeah, I think we failed 1 3 times.
Yeah. That's okay, though. I mean, I think some of it, we were teaching new players for that. And
yeah,
it was one of those things where I think we had them jump in like the fourth.
That's true. We didn't work anybody up because we want to keep finding the new puzzles. And yes. So we introduced new people and we're like, great, come you on can handle in it. Number five yeah. with us. Like, you know.
But it is interesting how the simplicity of the game of you're just playing a few cards, but the simplicity stays fresh because of those different strategies and the ways that different people think and the way that they go about trying to engage the game. And even like us who've played this game a lot, like we'll try and talk through the strategies that we like. And notice that doesn't necessarily work for some of the players we'll introduce it to.
It's not clicking for some people.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that they're not getting the game. They would just approach it from a different perspective. And I really like the flexibility and uniqueness of that, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think something else for me is just how quickly you can get this to the table and teach it. Like we've been talking about teaching a lot of new people. We've taught gamers and non-gamers. And I can basically hand out a few cards and say, all right, this is what we're doing. And within a few, like within a round, they're like, okay, I got it. And let's like, they'll be like, let's do it again. And so it's easy to hook people. It's easy to show both what the game is. And also as they kind of get going, they immediately jump in and take ownership of it. And it becomes part of their enjoyment. So mm-hmm. I like that too.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's accessible for new gamers. And we've had all the way down to, I think, an 11-year-old that mm-hmm. played with us. Obviously, a little bit of a harder learning curve for him when he played and he was asking for help with yeah. strategy or what certain things meant or things like that, but still enjoyed it and still saw it for what it is, which is a puzzle to figure out. So even if you're not getting it the first time, you want to keep coming back and you want to figure out the puzzle.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and it's interesting too, because your puzzle is always changing because you don't know what you're getting and you're only getting half the deck. And so learning how to be okay with the flexibility of that strategy that you talk about in the pregame of, okay, we talked about if somebody has the one, they're going to play it here. And then, you know, once everybody opens their hands and the lowest card anybody's got is a six, oh, well, crap. Now we got to reestablish what we want to do in real time.
Right. So but we can't say anything about it.
We can't say anything about it. We've just got to be ready for those, for those pivots. And so... I like that too. I think it's something that the game brings a lot for the little game that it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really adds a lot of flexibility and replayability, and I really enjoy that.
I do want to say, because you mentioned it being accessible for new players and it's very quick to get to the table to teach it and to dive right in, and people can kind of learn some of the rules as they go along, especially sure. if you start with some of the earlier scenarios. I think the very first scenario even takes out some of like one of the basic rules to help it be easier for you. Yeah. So I would definitely agree with you that it is a good ease of entry mm-hmm. for less experienced gamers or for people that maybe aren't as into games, but you think maybe they'd like to do a puzzle with you, right? Because it can feel like a puzzle to people. I will say that we were unsure of that when we sat down with just the game and the rule book. It felt like it was difficult to understand the rule book. Now, that could just be us, because being experienced gamers, I'm used to games working a certain way, and this game worked different from the way that I was used to games working.
Yeah.
And so, but I remember I poured over the rule book and we tried something and you were like, that can't be right. And then you poured over the rule book and we tried something. So I'm not going to necessarily say that it was a bad rule book, because eventually we did figure it out and we did sit down and play it, but it was harder to learn from the rule book than it was for other people that we taught later on. And so I guess I'd say maybe if you are an experienced gamer thinking about bringing this to the table for people that don't game as often, make sure that you've played it through a few times and that you're comfortable with it to teach it, and don't try to just learn from the rule book would be my advice.
Okay. I remember that, and I think part of it was we were tired the first time we tried it, and we were kind of expecting it to be easier to pick up than it was. But yeah, once we kind of wrestled with it a little bit, then I think I agree with you that it's not really a bad rule book. It just kind of requires pivoting your mind a little bit as far as how
that's
it operates.
Definitely what it was.
Yeah,
is I had to be like, oh, I can't think about this like a standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. I mean, it is unique for sure. I think too, the other thing is that because there are so many scenarios and there's a couple of small details as far as like this one's number one and this one is like level one of one, because each level comes with four sections. And so like there's ways to identify that, but you got to really be paying attention to the details to see that. So don't like just take everything out and start throwing it everywhere. You want to kind of keep it.
You want to really go through it in order.
Yeah.
Yeah. For leave sure. it in the box. And they make it easy. They've got yep. it. They've got it in order. They've got things very clearly numbered.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite mechanic from this game?
Yes. So, but I think my favorite mechanic is going to sound simple, but I think it's really, really cool.
Okay.
Obviously, you're saying you've got to start with whatever section the hand is pointing to. And yep. you've got to, that's got to be your lower section. And then you go around the clock clockwise. And at the top, you're trying not to get above 24. And so one of my favorite mechanics, though, is that it's not just that the numbers that you play there have to be low. It's that added together, they have to be below. Because if you average it out, you've got two cards per section. You have to put at least one card per section, and you could put more. But back to your example of, say, everybody's dealt high cards or everybody's dealt low cards, you know, you might end up putting several cards in the final slot,
mm-hmm.
and they're low cards, but they're still adding up to 20 because you got four of them there, you know, or whatever. Right. So that was one of my favorite mechanics, was that it wasn't just one card you're trying to get in order. It's the addition of the set of cards there
yeah.
that you're trying to get in order. And I think that's a really cool mechanic because it makes the game flexible for what you have in your hand. But it can be easy to look at what you have in your hand and think, oh, I've got high cards, I need to play high. But you wouldn't necessarily have to, because it's the cards it's what they sum up to. It's not actually the card that you lay there.
Yeah.
So.
No, that makes sense. I like that too. I like the kind of the basic, or not the basic, but the general strategy that we build around with the six sections, not just the two card like idea, but the 1 through 4, and then we say 4 through 8, and then like we break it down to where each section has a range. So that we, in our own heads, kind of become like, okay, this is generally what I'm looking for. And so if I play a 10 in the high slot, then I know that section still needs some work, but I kind of have a range for where that section needs to get above the previous one. Or if I throw a 7 in my second section, I'm like, okay, that one's done. Like it's basically where it needs to be. And there's definitely some trust your teammate stuff going on as you play this game, for sure. I think for me, I don't know, I'm torn between a few. Like, it would be easy to pick, getting to pick where the hand goes every time so that you can really change up your strategy that way, based on the board itself, and kind of deciding, well, we tried it this way that time, maybe we'll try it over here this time, maybe it'll work a little bit better. And then the other thing that I like is...
Yeah, that is a cool aspect.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know. This is one of those few games that I actually do enjoy that you only get half the deck, because that means you can't really plan for everything. And you do have some of that tactical, like in the moment reaction that you have to figure out.
But I think it's nice that you can see the suit of the card.
Yeah.
You can see whether it's a light or a dark card. And so there is some planning. If I've got a lot of dark cards and I see that that's what you've got left, then I know you don't have certain ones that I have, because I can tell what suit your cards are. So
that's
a cool aspect of the game in terms of planning ahead, even though you're only getting half the cards.
You can also see that in the pregame. And right. So you can say, right. okay, mm-hmm. we've got most of the blues, so we can kind of plan around that more than we can some other numbers. So then, but one of the unique things that I really like this, and I don't always love when games really modify a two-player game to make it work, but in this one, I really like it. So you need 12 cards, but if you had 6 cards at one time, you'd have a lot of information. And so the way that they make it work is you are dealt a hand of 4 and a hand of 2. And after you have played 2 of your cards, you get to see the other 2 and then figure out how to work with those as well. And I don't know, like, I really like that mechanic. Anne and I really wrestled with, do we make this just a 2-top table? One, to talk about how like we like this best at 2. But I wanted to, but I agree that it plays really well at 3 and 4 as well.
Yeah.
And so it was hard to be like, we really think this one should be 2, because I think it could be any level. But that mechanic in particular, I really enjoy a lot. So if you're looking for it to be a 2-player game, that mechanic in particular, I think works well to make the game function both as a 2-player game and as a little extra onto the twist towards the middle of the game, for sure.
Yes, I think when we played it at two player, we thought this is an amazing two player game, and we love it, and we're going to do it as a two player episode for the game table. But then we played it with three and four, and we thought, oh, darn, God, it's so good at three and four. It feels different than at two. Strategy feels a little bit more set, and like you can kind of understand what to expect from your partner with two. So you know less about the cards, but you know more about your partner, maybe because you're only focusing on one person.
Sure.
With three and four, it definitely felt a little bit more like more chaotic and less like I knew what was going on.
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, with more brains at the table, it definitely shifts right, the dynamic.
But we were able to utilize some of the card face-ups and the things like that. I mean, it was a great game at three and four, which is why we're doing it as a featured review instead of as a two-player. But please don't negate this if you're looking for a good two-player game.
For sure. Well. Yep. Anna, is there anything about the game you don't like?
Well, I did mention that I felt like the rulebook was hard at first. Mm-hmm. I remember not knowing if the cards themselves had to ascend in value or just their sum. Mm. And then later on we realized, no, it's just their sum. And so I do think that there's some wording in the rule book that could have been a little bit more clear. There were some good examples. That's what answered my questions, okay, was the examples in the rule book. I was able to go and say, oh, okay, so in this example they did this, and that means this rule wording that I'm having trouble with actually means this other thing. So yeah, I mean, that would be my main con for the game, is that I could tell it was a simple game and I should get it. And I just felt really dumb at first because some of the wording in the rule book was confusing to me. But again, we were a little bit tired that night. And I also think that I was expecting a certain play style and the game was different from that. So yeah. I was coming in with different expectations when I was trying to sit down and learn it too. So how about you? Anything that you wish would be different with the game?
For me, it's hard to really pick on anything about this game. I think it does exactly what it's wanting to do, and I don't really have any qualms with it. I think that I will say, I think that for some people, they're just not going to enjoy this game. If you don't like the mind, that concept of like limited communication, playing cards down, and there is either you believe that we are all mind melding at the table, or there is some luck involved. And if you don't like that, then this is not going to change your mind. It still has that aspect of it. But for me, I think it does all the things that I would want a next evolution of the mind to be more of a game to be. And so for me...
Is it by the same people?
No, it is not.
I was going to say,
just,
okay.
It's just got that very like...
You're right, but...
Like, there's so many people that know the mind that I feel like it's an easy comparison.
Okay.
Even though it is a different company. But it's very much that base layer is the same of dropping the numbers and making sure they're in the right spots.
That's true. I was just thinking there's other games where...
Yeah, I know. I just can't think about those at the moment. So
it's not just the mind that does that. But no. The mind does that, and it does the putting the cards in the right order. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's a similarity.
Yeah. So, but for me, like, I don't know. Like I said, there's just not a lot that I would complain about this game. I think it does exactly what it's supposed to.
Well, and I would say, because it is a certain type of game, right? And so... If you like puzzle games where there's one mm-hmm. right answer and you're having to figure it out, well, it's not that kind of puzzle game. You know, if you're somebody that likes more competitive, less cooperative, this is incredibly cooperative. And it's cooperative to the point that you don't even really have a, you did awesome or you didn't do well. I mean, it's a little bit more freeform cooperative. You can play a scenario as many times as you want. The rules say that you could skip a scenario and save it for later. And so it's not
very flexible.
Yeah. The point is not to be super competitive with this game. And so if that's something you like in your games, then this might not be the one for you either.
I will say, I don't know if this is really a critique, but it is something to be aware of. This game will make certain people feel dumb. It will make them feel like, especially because it is cooperative and you really do have to work together or it's not going to come together.
Yeah.
And so there can be one person that's like constantly feeling like, oh, this is my fault. Oh, this is the reason we can't figure it out. So that's something to be aware of as well. So if you have somebody in your group that might be like that, then that's something to consider as you think about this game.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Any final thoughts?
I like it.
Great.
Yeah. I'm excited to play through it. The game says 10 plus, and I think that that's accurate. It's one that I'd be excited to show the kids later on, mm-hmm. but I don't know. There's just too much strategy internal and external between the people to really have it much younger than mm-hmm. that. But I enjoy playing it with you and I enjoy playing it with other people.
For sure. Yeah, it's definitely one that's going to stay in our collection, and looking forward to playing it more. We have not gone through every single scenario and beaten it, so looking forward to jumping back in. And even like some of the scenarios that we've done more than once, like I never feel like, oh, we've already done this. It's just, like I said, it's really just a shuffling of the rules with a new set.
Yeah.
So it always kind of has that fresh feel to it. All right. Well, if you have any thoughts, comments, critiques about this game or the podcast, we would love to hear from you. I just want to say thank you so much first for listening and getting this far. If you want to reach out, you can reach out to us at thegametablepodcast.com, thegametablepodcast@gmail.com, or you can find on Board Game Geek. 5-star reviews, subscribing your podcast player of choice, subscribing on YouTube, thumbsing this video, all the things that we do in 2026 to be able to make everybody see content. We would appreciate if you would do that. And if you can't, it's all good. I understand. Life's busy. Kids are crying. Kids got soccer practice and everything else. It's all good. All good. You have soccer practice, maybe. Who knows?
You just got to work, you know.
Huh, that's true.
All sorts of things can be
Scott,
going
Scott, good
in
luck
your
at
life.
Work today. I know Scott listens on the ride in every morning, so.
Yes, I know.
So tomorrow he'll be listening to this.
Thank you for Thanks. Mansplaining that to me.
All right, well, I'm going to go cry in a corner now. All of you have a wonderful time with your day and a wonderful time with your life. And may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
It was the best of times.
It was the greatest of times.